Okay, Genesis chapter 6. We're going to look at a topic today that Gladys mentioned in her prayer. Mercy and grace. You mentioned mercy and grace in your prayer. I said, well, that's neat. That's what we're looking at today. Mercy and grace, part one. I don't really know how long it'll take to go through some of this stuff, but there's just a lot in the Bible. And originally I was thinking, you know, I was looking at some records and I said, well, look at mercy. And it's hard to look at mercy in the Word of God without looking at grace, right? Well, why don't we look at mercy and grace? So that's what we're going to do. Sometimes I think that believers are inclined to think that everything that happens to us is a direct result of something we do or we don't do. You know, sometimes say, well, I didn't do this, enough of this, so therefore this didn't happen to me. Or, you know, I did too much of that, and therefore this happened. You know, part and parcel, that's quite true. I mean, there is a cause and effect to life and the things you do. But we can never forget about God's mercy and God's grace. Everything, because the other former way of thinking would mean that everything is in your hands, right? And it really isn't, right? I hate to say it, it's not really in your hands. It's in God's hands. Right? There's an undergirding of God's grace and mercy and protection and love and blessing that, you know, we could sit here and watch TV the rest of our lives and it would still be there. Right? That's how gracious and merciful and wonderful God is. The thing that I noticed when I was looking at these records in the Bible is there is a caveat, if you will, and that is that he only ever asked his people to do one thing, and that was to walk by his word. Right? And those who did, reminds me of a sports guy once said, it's amazing how all the guys who really work out all the time have all the luck when they're playing. Right? Well, it's because they put the, you know, he was being facetious, but the same idea. Well, it's amazing how in the Word of God, all those who walked by his word saw amazing grace and mercy in their lives. Right? But not only them, those who didn't as well. And so you see, it's not entirely in your hands. Right? There is a, well, let's go to, let's just talk a little bit about how the words are related and what the biblical definition is. Although this is not a complete biblical definition. There's a lot of aspects to mercy and grace, so I'm just going to give you a basic one. But you understand, mercy is really, and we're talking about divine mercy here, not about, you know, human mercy, but divine mercy. God's mercy is where he withholds what you deserve for the mistake you might have made or the things that didn't go quite right. He withholds that and prevents the evil or the bad stuff from happening to you. It's a withholding of merited judgment, really. Right? But it's also kindness. The word kindness is used a lot of times in the context of mercy. It's just God's kindness to his people. Right? So it's just more than just, you know, you can't. It's hard to just narrow down. This is the definition of a word, and because it's just, God is so multifaceted, right? Grace, on the other hand, is where, you know, you're shown favor. Favor in someone, and again, we talk from God's point of view, God's favor on a person's life. Again, completely undeserved. Right? So those two words, they're sort of related, right? Because mercy, where God withholds something that's going to happen to you, well, that's pretty gracious if you ask me. Right? It's a blessing, isn't it? Right. Right. So grace, so they're both in the context of God's blessings on a person's life. And so when I was looking through the word, it was pretty neat. In the case of mercy, when I talked before about cause and effect, we think a lot of times in our lives that everything we do is a result of something we did or didn't do. Well, here's an example. Mercy, you did something and you expect this, but that's not what happens to you. So the cause and effect chain is broken by God. He goes, it's okay. I've got this covered. Right? Because there's no way, and I think the older I get, the more I come to understand, there's just no way you're going to figure everything out in life, is there? There's no way you're going to control every circumstance. There's no way without just trusting completely in God, right? And you do what you know to do, right? So that cause and effect. The other case, how about grace? Well, cause and effect, well, you didn't do anything, and God blesses you anyway. Right? So there's another one of those. There's no cause and effect relationship there. He just blesses you. So I think as believers, we, and this is going to be really the undergirding of the whole thing, is we need to expect God's grace and mercy in our lives, not by the works that we do, but by what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. And we're not going to get to that at all today, but that's sort of, that's where we're heading. In Genesis chapter 6, so we'll look at a few, get a chance to look at a few wonderful records here today, and then we'll see how long this takes over the next couple of weeks, a few weeks. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Interesting. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy a man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. Doesn't sound like a great situation. Verse 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And if you read later on about Noah, it said that he did God's will, and he walked with God. Noah found, it's interesting how the guys who do all the exercise and get the grace, right? He walked with God, and God showed him grace. But, you know, not by the works that he had done, because it says here that things were pretty bad, but God had grace on him. And it was as a result of God's grace in this situation, you and I are here today, because he allowed life to continue. By God's grace. So the grace that he had on Noah has an impact on you and I today. We're still alive. We're here. If God had not had grace, that would have been the end of the world. In Genesis chapter, I think we're going to 18. Just going to look at some records. And you know, it's an interesting how often grace and mercy occur together. And you'll see that as we look at these records. This is a great record. Again, this is not tied to the previous record, but just looking at the topic of grace and mercy. In Genesis 18, verse 17, and the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? And he's talking about the evil in Sodom and Gomorrah and what God was about to do to Sodom and Gomorrah. Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he had spoken of him. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. So he's going to get things checked out in Sodom and Gomorrah. Then we go down to chapter 19. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot, who was related to Abraham, as we know, his nephew, sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, behold, now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, unto your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, no, but we will abide in this tree all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. It's interesting, I remember it was in India, you know, talking about this first time, they didn't say yes, right? There was one girl who cleans my aunt and uncle's house. There's a servant, a few servants that they have that are part of a family. And just common there, where they'll be living in a open platform, open plot nearby somewhere, in a tent or something. And it's quite common. But they were making the equivalent of, I think it was 4,000 rupees a month, which is $40, right, for the month, is what they make. And so when I was leaving, because she'd been coming to the house every day, you know, I said, well, listen, I just want to bless you with, you know, I was giving her 500 rupees, 10 bucks, and I had to ask her like four times before she would take that money from me. You know, that constraining custom is so deep in the heart of the East. So I was like, come on, please, No, I wouldn't do this anyway. I cleaned for you, and it's no problem. So I said, no, take it. So it's interesting here. They wouldn't turn in, but then he constrained them, and they said, okay, we'll turn in. And they turned into him and entered into his house, and he made them at feast and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round about, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. So the men are hitting the door, and they called unto Lot and said unto them, where are the men which came in unto thee this night? Bring them out that we may know them. And they're talking about sexually know them. Okay, we're talking about a bunch of men who want to sexually know these men who have arrived in his house. That's the word. And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after them and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. And he wouldn't be saying that if they were just a matter of, I just want to come in and say hello. And he's not talking about saying hello. They're talking about knowing these men. Behold now, I have two daughters which have, I can't get over this one. Behold now, I have two daughters which have not known men. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you and do to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. That was the Eastern custom. They're under your shadow. You would do anything to protect them to the point of giving up your own daughters. Oh, I don't know if I can go that far. And they said, stand back. See that? This is how evil these men were. They just wanted those men. That's how evil Sodom and Gomorrah had come. They just wanted those men. They were after those men. Even the daughter thing. No, I want those men, right? It was you can see the evilness of the situation. Verse 9. They said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will be a judge now? Now will we deal worse with thee than with them? And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot. So now they're going to go after Lot. Wow. And came near to break the door. You can tell, sense the riotous spirits and sensual spirits. There's a lot of pressure here, and it's evil on Lot's house. And they smote the men. Verse 10. But the men put forth their hand, the angels, and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut to the door. He's outside, and they grabbed him and brought him. Watch for God's grace and mercy throughout this record. They grab him, and they pull him inside to protect him. And they smote the men that were at the door of the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. And the men said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters and whatsoever thou hast in the city? Bring them out of this place. The angel said, listen, you got to get everybody out of this place. Your relatives, everybody's got to go. For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot. So in the morning, they came in the morning, the angels hastened Lot, saying, look, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. So you know something's happening. There's some evil stuff happening here. And while he lingered, listen to this now, he lingered. He knew what was going on. They had just told him that God was going to destroy the city. Right? And he saw what was happening out there. And yet, what does he do? He lingers. He's thinking about it. He lingered. He's like, well, I don't know. The men laid hold upon his hand. And this is mercy. Right? Because he had a chance to get out of there. And he wasn't doing it. So the angels grabbed his hand and said, you're coming with us now. Right? He didn't deserve this. You see, it's also grace. But it's also mercy. Because he was about to get what was going to happen to the rest of them. And we'll see this again in a minute here. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hands of his two daughters. They're all lingering. The Lord being merciful unto him. See, he was merciful. Because he would have just gone with the iniquity of the whole city and been destroyed along with the rest of them. But God had mercy and pulled him up. Did Lot do anything to deserve this? Was he doing something really holy that God... No. Mercy is mercy. Right? How about us who have accepted Jesus Christ? Can we count on God's mercy daily and his grace? Okay. So you make a mistake. Are you going to get burned for it necessarily? Are you going to get all worried about it? Are you going to get all nervous about it? Are you going to get fearful about it? No. God's mercy undergirds his people. Like it's unbelievable to me here. Okay, let's keep reading. And they brought him forth and set him without, they set him without the city. Right? And it came to pass when they had brought them forth abroad that he said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain. Escape to the mountain. Lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight. There's grace. And thou hast magnified thy mercy. There it is again. Which thou hast shown unto me in saving my life. See, he recognized it. And I cannot escape the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. See, I mean, despite, you know, like you would think, angels, messengers of God, they gave me good information before. They're telling me to go to the mountain. It's a good chance that information is pretty good too. He goes, no, I know better. The mountain's not the place to go. I don't want to go there. I want to go to the city. Right? Verse 20. Behold, now this city is near to flee onto. There's a little city here, and it's a little tiny. It's a little one. It's a little city. It's not a big city. Right? Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? You can just see him arguing. And my soul shall live. And he said unto them, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also. That's grace. Right? Talk about grace upon grace and mercy on Lot's life here. Right? Did he deserve any of it? No. Look at this. That I will not overthrow the city for the which thou hast spoken. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou be come thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. And the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. The angels said, don't look back. In her heart, she was still looking back to Sodom and Gomorrah. Didn't do her any good. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where the Lord, he stood before the Lord, and looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in the which Lot dwelt. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain. Whoa, what do you know? And his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. You want to talk about grace and mercy in a man's life? How do you like that? You know, and sometimes you might make a mistake or not do something accurately or properly, and you get all worried or bent out of shape or something. What do you think Lot was doing here? He was living in a city that was essentially homosexual and very evil and powerful, like not just really evilly homosexual. They were pushing to get these angels. And Lot was living there, and he was kind of part of the city because he was sat in the gate, so he was now a judge in the city. And he was, and yet God had mercy on his life and grace on his life. Look at Genesis 39. To me, it's interesting that Lot didn't do anything to deserve that. Genesis 39. Verse 7. And it came to pass after these things that his master, this is Joseph now. Remember Joseph, you guys know the record, how he got to Egypt and was taking care of Potiphar's household. And verse 7, while this was happening, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. So he's not. I'm not going to touch you, is what he's saying. We're over here. Okay. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph, because thou art his wife, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, Sir, see, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. Liar! And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in prison. And as far as that was concerned, he had committed a crime. He hadn't, but the law was, you committed a crime, and therefore you deserve this. Look at verse 21. But his Lord, the Lord, was with Joseph and showed him, what? Mercy. Mercy. This time he hadn't even done anything, but as far as he was concerned in terms of the law, he deserved worse. But God is the one, not Joseph. It wasn't Joseph did anything, it was God. God stepped in and showed him mercy. And gave him favor. That's the word, grace. It's interesting, eh? Mercy and grace go hand in hand. Gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Who gave him favor in the sight of the... God. How? I don't know. Says he did it. God gave him favor in the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. It wasn't Joseph was so amazingly intelligent, or he might have been a wonderful man. Sounds like he was. But it's God who made it to prosper. God is the one who made what he did to prosper. God is the one who showed him mercy. Joseph couldn't do anything. Could he? To get the mercy? He was thrown into jail. God stepped in. Can we count on God's mercy and grace today? You think his hand is shortened now, that he wouldn't show us mercy and grace if we need it? I think not. Exodus 33. God is the prime mover in life, lest we should ever think that, you know, we're running everything. We're not. Exodus 33. I think we'll just read this record here. Verse 1, the Lord said unto Moses, Depart and go up hence, thou and the people which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, into the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, Unto thy seed will I give it. And I will send an angel before thee, that's grace. And I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people. So the people were a stiff-necked, stubborn people, and God gave them an angel. That's grace. Lest I consume thee in the way. And when the people heard these evil tidings, they mourned. And no man did put on him his ornaments. For the Lord had said unto Moses, Say unto the children of the people, You are a stiff-necked people. So God told Moses, By the way, I want you to tell them they're stiff-necked. He didn't just tell Moses, he goes, I want you to tell them too. I will come up into the midst of thee in a moment and consume thee. Therefore now put off thy ornaments from thee, that I may know what to do unto thee. And the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by the Mount Horeb. And Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it without the camp, afar off from the camp, and called the tabernacle congregation. And it came to pass that every one which sought the Lord went out unto the tabernacle of the congregation, which was without the camp. It came to pass when Moses went out into the tabernacle that all the people rose up and stood, every man at his tent doors. They all went to their tents and watched Moses going into the tabernacle. Kind of a neat scene. And looked after Moses until he was gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, as Moses entered the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended. So the big cloudy pillar comes down and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose up and worshipped, every man in his tent door. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. That is grace upon grace upon grace to Moses' life. And that he turned again unto the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. And Moses said unto the Lord, See, thou sayest unto me, Bring me this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. See, there it is. He found grace in God's sight. Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. And he said, My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. And he said unto him, If thy presence go not with me, carry us not up hence. For wherein shall it be known here that I stand and thy people have found grace in thy sight? See, how many times does it say it? That despite their stiff-neckedness, despite what they were doing, where they were, God just shows them grace. You know, Moses definitely stood for them, but God said, okay, I. And this is before Jesus Christ had come and done all he did for us. Is it not in that thou goest with us? So shall we be separated, I and thy people, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken. For thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name. And he said, I beseech thee, show me thy glory. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before thee, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee, and will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. Mercy and grace. Again, that's God's calling card, right? He's merciful and he's gracious, and we should be so thankful for that. Exodus 34, verse 1. And the Lord said unto Moses, Hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first. So what had Moses done with the first two? He had broken them. Right. This is God's grace here, because he's going to let him do it again. He could have said, Moses, you broke those. That's it, the end of it. He had mercy on him and grace. Like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables which thou breakest. There you go. And be ready in the morning, and come up in the morning unto Mount Sinai, and present thyself there to me in the top of the mount. And no man shall come up with thee, neither let any man be seen throughout all the mount, neither let the flocks nor herds feed before the mount. And he hewed two tables of stone like the first. And Moses rose up early in the morning, and went up into the Mount Sinai, as the Lord had said, commanded him, and took in his hand the two tables of stone. The Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there, and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abundant in goodness and truth. He himself said, I am merciful and I am gracious to Moses. Isn't that cool? Numbers 14. A couple more verses here. It's hard to do this in one fellowship. There's so many. I mean, really, the Bible is God's grace and mercy to his people. Numbers 14. 18. What do we read here? The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people, according unto the greatness of thy mercy, and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. In 2 Samuel 22. Make it easy, we're just going in order. 2 Samuel 22. And we'll close here in these couple of verses here. This is David and Solomon both recognizing God's great grace, great mercy. In 2 Samuel 22:47, this is David. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalteth be the God of the rock of my salvation. It is God that avengeth me, and that bringeth down the people under me, and that bringeth me forth from mine enemies. Thou also hast lifted me up on high above them that rose up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Look who he gives the credit to for everything. Therefore I will give thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen, and I will sing praise unto thy name. He is the tower of salvation for his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, unto David and to his seed forevermore. And in 1 Kings, finally, verse chapter 3, when Solomon now thinks back to his father, look what he writes here. In 1 Kings chapter 3, because David just thanked God for his great mercy. And in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 6, and Solomon said, Thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy. He knew that. According as he walked before thee in truth. There's that thing I was telling you about, you know, those who walk with him get the greatest mercy and grace. And in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on this throne as it is this day. See, he was thankful for the mercy God had shown his father. And now he was saying, well, thank you for the mercy you've shown by allowing me to reign now. It's interesting, you know, we don't often think about being thankful to God for his mercy and his grace every day. We see sometimes we throw the words around a little bit loosely, you know, thanks for your mercy and grace. And thinking through, well, what does that mean to my life? We're not in charge of, you know, the cause and effect of life isn't the overarching thing in life. The overarching thing is God's goodness, his grace. It's the goodness of God that calls us to him. And undergirding that goodness is grace, is mercy, is long-suffering, is love, is kindness, all these things that we can expect from our Father God, just like these men did. And did they do anything to deserve it? No, in many cases, the instances are where they're stiff-necked, they're lingering, they're doing stuff, and, you know, not really, and yet God just comes in, okay, I'll be gracious, I'll be merciful, because that is what I am. Right. So that's part one. We'll look at more on grace and mercy sometime next time.